ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, 26th of January. I'm Isabella Higgins, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. From scientists to soldiers, artists and sports people, to business and community leaders, almost 1,000 people have been recognised in this year's Australia Day's honours list. There are 200 more recipients than last year, all to receive insignia of their awards at state government house ceremonies in the coming months. The Governor-General, Sam Mostyn, said all of them reflect Australian values like tenacity, community, kindness and curiosity. Annie Guest reports.
The crowd roaring, Freeman wins gold, Cathy's the winner, Australia the winner.
She was draped in both Aboriginal and Australian flags for her Sydney Olympics victory lap and for her ongoing work championing reconciliation, positive social impact, athletics and as a role model. Cathy Freeman is one of 10 receiving an AC, Companion of the Order of Australia.
I'm just being an authentic, you know, version of who I am always. It's lovely that young people still see me as some kind of symbol of possibility, and it makes me feel good.
90-year-old Ken Elliott and his wife Jocelyn ran a hospital in the West African country of Burkina Faso for 44 years, operating on thousands and charging them little or nothing. They're appointed AOs, or Officers of the Order of Australia, for distinguished service to international relations through humanitarian medical care.
We'd seen what I'm going to call miracles, because they were miracles, horrible cases, and they all walked home.
The Elliots were kidnapped by Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic militants, with Jocelyn released soon afterwards and Ken kept hostage for more than 7 years. Just days after his death, Midnight Oil drummer Rob Hurst is posthumously awarded a Member of the Order of Australia, or AM, for significant service to the performing arts. Hurst helped start the band and co-wrote their hit soundtracks to social, environmental and Indigenous movements. Among 159 others honoured with AMs are Frances Armett for service to the Indigenous community and Aussie rules, and children's author Graham Bass. Eliza Hull is one of 472 people receiving a Medal of the Order of Australia for service to the arts through her music videos and TV work featuring disability. If these legs were not moved. Along with podcasts and children's books, Eliza Hull raises awareness, including about her own experience with Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease, which impacts mobility.
You know, for a long time it was something that I was really afraid of and something that I hid, but it's enabled me to advocate for other people with disability. Kids come up to me and say, you know, I love this book because I see myself in this book.
Those receiving public service medals this year include eSafety Commissioner Julie Inman Grant for improving online safety.
Annie Guest reporting there. She was once an ordinary Australian who wanted to reach for the stars. Now the country's first qualified astronaut has been named Australian of the Year. Catherine Bunnell Pegg was presented the award by Prime Minister Anthony Albanese last night. An endurance runner and a dementia campaigner were also recognised for their service to community. Kimberly Price reports.
The 2026 Australian of the Year is Catherine Bunnell Pegg.
She spent her life shooting for the stars and encouraging young Australians to do the same. And now Catherine Bunnell Pegg has been honoured for her work, named this year's Australian of the Year. Catherine Bunnell Pegg was first to graduate as an astronaut under the Australian flag from the European Space Agency's training program and is now the Director of Space Technology at the Australian Space Agency. Her goal is to become the first local astronaut sent to space on an Australian mission.
As a kid, I used to lie on the dry grass in my backyard and gaze up at the stars in awe. Australia's First Nations people's deep connection to sky country reminds us that looking up has always been part of who we are.
Catherine Bunnell-Pegg's other mission is to encourage young Australians to pursue careers in science, maths, engineering and technology, or STEM.
For Australia to be able to influence and to contribute to addressing the global issues of the next years, the next century, we need every curious mind engaged, regardless of gender, of background or of postcode.
A pioneer in ageing and mental health research, Professor Henry Brodaty was named Senior Australian of the Year. Watching his father suffer from Alzheimer's inspired his work.
Almost half the cost of dementia is caused by preventable factors that we can modify in our lifestyle now.
Professor Brodaty co-founded the Centre for Healthy Brain Ageing in 2012 and has created an interventions trial for the disease.
Our randomised controlled trial of an intensive online lifestyle coaching program had the best results yet in the world. We designed this a decade ago. We can do better. We can do a lot better.
As an endurance runner, Ned Brockman continually challenges himself, all in the name of raising awareness and funds for homelessness. The Young Australian of the Year for 2026 has raised almost $3 million during his 46-day run from Perth to Sydney.
In a country as prosperous as Australia, why is it that 122,000 Australians sleep rough every night? That number should stop us all in our tracks.
Proud Wadjuk Yued Noongar man Frank Mitchell was named Australia's local hero for his work in helping young Indigenous people find careers in the construction industry. The Western Australian man and his partners have created more than 70 Aboriginal upskilling positions in the industry, including 30 electrical apprenticeships.
When I started my apprenticeship, my life shifted. My uncle offered me a lifeline, a mature age apprenticeship. I now understand that work and education are not just about income or career progression. They are determinants of health and well-being.
Australia's local hero, Frank Mitchell, ending that report by Kimberly Price. A US citizen has been shot and killed by immigration officers in the city of Minneapolis this weekend, sparking outrage and demonstrations. The incident has been under intense scrutiny as video evidence contradicts the accounts given by officials. It's the second American killed by federal agents in less than a month. For more, North America correspondent Rachel Clayton joined me earlier. Rachel, what do we know at this stage?
Good morning. Well, we know that scrutiny over this second fatal shooting has continued for the past 24 hours. We also know that the victim was a 37-year-old man called Alex Pretty. He was a US citizen, a nurse. He had no criminal convictions, according to local police, and also had a license to carry a gun. His family have issued a statement calling for the truth, and they say they're heartbroken but also very angry. And a GoFundMe page is actually started for Alex Pretty too. It's reached over $600,000 already. And we also know that there are going to be two separate investigations into this shooting. Homeland Security said yesterday that they were going to be heading a formal investigation. That really wasn't good enough for state officials and city officials who have no trust in federal authorities right now. They've said they're going to conduct their own investigation. And a judge this morning has actually barred federal officials from destroying any evidence so that the state can also look at that evidence. And what's under scrutiny now is why Alex Pretty was shot and the events leading up to that shooting. So news outlets have been analysing video footage for the past 24 hours and come to the conclusion that Mr. Pretty appeared to be holding a phone, not a gun, when he was approached by ICE agents, and that he was shot after a gun was taken from him, from his waistband. So he was disarmed and then he was shot. And the multiple news outlets have sort of come to that same conclusion. And that's really forced federal authorities today to shift the focus and the narrative of events. So yesterday, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem went very hard on saying that Mr. Pretty was a domestic terrorist, that he'd brandished a gun, and that agents feared for their lives, and that's why he was shot. So that has shifted. And on US media this morning, we've heard from multiple government officials. One of them was Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. And we can take a listen to what he said.
What I don't see, and I don't see protesting happening, and this narrative that what was happening on that yesterday morning, what was protesting interrupted by ICE, is not what we see. I also do not see a single state and local law enforcement officer there to help. And that should be the narrative that we're talking about, is that what we have is ICE doing isolated operations to get criminals off the street with zero cooperation from the governor, from leadership in Congress, or from the mayor.
Border Patrol official Greg Bovino, he sort of represents ICE, was on CNN this morning too. He said much the same thing. Anytime he was asked what the evidence was that this man, Mr. Preddy, brandished a gun, he shifted and talked about something else. A lot of the focus has been on local police and why they were there. He also said that the victims are the Border Patrol agents and said that Mr. Preddy was a suspect. So there's a lot of doubling down and blaming state authorities from federal officials today.
Rachel, this shooting, the news has spread across the world. It's caused outrage in America. Are we likely to see more protests?
We are likely to see more protests in Minneapolis. The weather across the US right now, there's a huge snowstorm, ice storm that's hitting the majority of the country. And I think there was a lot of thinking that people would stay inside of Minneapolis, but it's actually quite sunny there today. There's a lot of snow, but it's looking a lot warmer than other parts of the country. And people are already out gathering around a vigil peacefully. People are sort of just talking and mulling about. There's a lot of flowers that have been put down, dozens of bunches of flowers, photos of Alex Preddy and messages to him. People stayed overnight in Minneapolis to guard that vigil to make sure it wasn't taken away. So I think we are going to see a lot of people mourning in that city today. As to the rest of the country, there were protests yesterday in DC and in New York. We're very unlikely to see that happen today. It is extremely cold in those cities and a lot of other cities, but I have already seen people are protesting on social media, pushing a message there, trying to boycott particular stores that they think support ICE and things like that. So I think we're going to see that ongoing. And then, of course, tomorrow we're going to see a legal challenge. The city of Minneapolis is asking a judge to rule on a restraining order to kick ICE out of the city. So that's sort of what we're waiting for next.
Correspondent Rachel Clayton in Washington there. The Middle East remains on high alert this morning with the prospect of a US military strike on Iran still looming. The Islamic regime has promised to retaliate with force if attacked. It comes as new reports about the scale of the deadly crackdown on anti-government protesters emerge, with fears the death toll is now in the tens of thousands. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran is in Jerusalem. Matthew, what's the latest on whether the US will attack Iran?
Isabella, good morning. We are sort of in a waiting game, a holding pattern at the moment while we see exactly how the US President Donald Trump is going to tackle this issue. It was back on Friday that he was again threatening Iran with military action and saying that there was a massive fleet, an armada was actually the term that he used, on its way to the Middle East. Now, we know that an aircraft carrier and a number of warships are steaming towards the Middle East region. They are led by the aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln. But by most reports, it appears that they haven't quite arrived in the region yet. When they do arrive, that could be a pivotal moment here. It could spell could add to the situation where the US feels it is in a position to attack Iran, having that sort of firepower close at hand. It could also help allay any of the concerns from some of the US's regional allies and partners that attacking Iran could spell the beginning of a broader regional conflict. And it also could be a further deterrent for the Iranian regime. In other words, it's already said to Donald Trump, or at least this is what Donald Trump is saying, that it has stopped the execution of hundreds of those anti-regime protesters. Having those military assets in the Middle East could serve as a deterrent, fearful that if it did start to undertake any of those executions, that it could be targeted. And that is why everyone is watching this very, very closely. And it also comes amid some really shocking and horrifying figures that are being circulated around the death toll from that brutal crackdown by Iranian security forces against the anti-regime protesters. Time magazine is currently citing two senior officials within the Iranian health ministry saying that death toll is in the realms of 30,000 6,000 people. Now, that tallies with figures that are being put out by some doctors based in Europe who are coordinating and communicating with their colleagues in Iran, also suggesting that that figure could be around 30,000. And they're also reporting tens of thousands of people having been arrested.
And Matthew, looking at another issue in the region, another one which the US is heavily involved in, the Gaza ceasefire, what's the latest on the efforts to see that deal move into its next phase?
Well, over the weekend, the US envoy for the Middle East, actually his title has been broadened to the US envoy for peace missions, that is Steve Witkoff. He met with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, along with the US President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. They were discussing the future of this ceasefire. Steve Witkoff has posted on social media saying that those talks were positive and constructive, which is quite telling considering that Israel has been quite angry about an announcement that was made last week by this new Palestinian technocratic government installed by the Trump administration to take over governance of Gaza. That announcement being that the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt, which Israel currently controls, would be open sometime in this coming week. That's something that Israel did not want to see, particularly because one Israeli hostage remains inside Gaza. We know this evening, local time, that the IDF is launching a large-scale operation, that's how it's describing it, to search for the remains of Ran Gvili, the final Israeli hostage there. Israel continuing to say that the opening of Rafah should have been contingent on that body being handed over by Hamas. Hamas saying it has given all of the intelligence it has about the whereabouts of those remains to mediators and to then onwards to the Israeli authorities. So it is still a very fragile situation. We know that despite that ceasefire, more than 480 people have been killed inside Gaza since it came into force in October. Many people on the ground saying that this is not a ceasefire, this is not a truce, this is a continuation of what was happening for more than 2 years, albeit at a lesser intensity.
Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran. Large parts of the country are sweltering through what's on track to be a record-breaking heatwave. There are forecasts in the mid to high 40s across South Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland and the NT today. And tomorrow could be the hottest ever day in Victoria, with the Bureau of Meteorology warning temperatures could hit 49 degrees Celsius for the first time. Oliver Gordon has been taking a look.
Tennis enthusiasts battled scorching conditions at the Australian Open over the weekend. Melbourne man Hamish Barrow was one of many parked next to a giant fan blowing out cool mist.
Very refreshing, much needed now that the sun's out.
And the heat creates dangerous bushfire conditions. Early Sunday, smoke from a bushfire in the Otway Ranges drifted over Melbourne and the surrounding areas.
You could smell it throughout the whole house. It was really hazy, so yeah, it was pretty dire.
It's not just Victoria facing record heat.
This could well be one of the biggest heat waves that we've seen since we've been keeping records in many locations.
Christy Johnson is senior meteorologist at the Bureau of Meteorology.
We have widespread severe heat waves extending across almost all of South Australia, most of New South Wales, up into southern Queensland and southern Northern Territory, and also particularly northern or central and northern parts of Victoria. And we even have a heatwave warning out for the central plateau in Tasmania.
Temperatures began approaching 50 degrees in parts of Western Australia early last week. A trough then dragged that heat across the country. It arrived in parts of Victoria, New South Wales and southern Queensland over the weekend.
And we are expecting that that heat will continue to linger over the southeast of the country throughout the coming week.
And the Bureau's Christy Johnson says tomorrow is shaping up as a particularly bad day for fires.
It's going to be windier on Tuesday and there's also going to be a wind change, which is very significant for fighting fires, because all of a sudden the flank of the fire becomes the head of the fire and it heads in a different direction and it can be very dangerous.
Victoria could also see a new record set that day, with the Victorian town of Oyen forecast to reach 49 degrees.
We've never seen a temperature higher than 48.5 8. So if we do get that 49 at Oyen, then that could be a new record, a new state record for Victoria. It's really going to be important for people to take precautions to stay cool.
Retiree George Coleman lives just out of Oyen and has seen the temperature gauge hit the high 40s in the past.
Just like if you lit your oven and stuck your head in there, that's how hot it gets.
How are you preparing for the possible 49 degree day on Tuesday in Oyen?
Got a refrigerated air conditioner. You got to stay alert. Keep your eye on the weather.
Victorian man George Coleman ending Oliver Gordon's report. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Isabella Higgins.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Elon Musk loved it. His AI tool Grok, which enabled users to edit images of real people and put them online for all to see, even semi-naked. Well, now he's put limits on the tool. But is that the end of the story? Today, Sam Cole, a tech journalist and co-founder of 404 Media, on the Grok scandal. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.